All right. Thank you, members. We do have a quorum. I call the House Education Policy Committee meeting to order. And our first order of business is approving the minutes from Wednesday, February 28th. And Representative Frazier, have you had a chance to look at? I knew there were people there just a moment ago.
Yes, Madam Chair, I will move to approve the minutes.
All right. Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Frazier moves the minutes of February 28th. Any discussion of the minutes? All right. Seeing none, please, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. We have approved the minutes. All right. Representative Adelson is here with us today to talk about, again, the READ Act and some further work that we've been doing now that it's been launched and is in the schools and we're getting feedback. And I know that I've talked to quite a few people across the states, including the school districts that I represent, about the importance of this work. And I do want to emphasize again, that's everybody, every discussion that I've had is agreeing how important it is, this initiative that we've embarked on as a state, but also knowing that we need further work. So we are very happy to hear further work on the READ Act, which is House File 3744. Representative Adelson, not being a member of this committee, I will ask again, Representative Frazier, would you please motion 3744 before the committee to be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Frazier.
You can use a minority member if Frazier gets that.
Okay, yeah.
Okay,
and you're right.
You exist.
My vision is being blocked, and you're right. I'm probably going. Thank you. Thank you for volunteering. All right. With that, the bill is before us, and I believe that you do have a DE amendment, the DE4, which is further work to get the bill in the way that you would like to present it to the committee. So, Representative Mueller, would you move the DE4 amendment?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Mueller. Any discussion on the amendment, which is a DE amendment and is the bill that we would like to discuss today? All right. Hearing no discussion, all in favor of the DE4 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Thank you. The DE4 amendment passes, and we now have the bill the way that you would like to discuss it today. And please proceed, Representative Adelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Can I just say it's so great to be in your committee, and also it's like a sauna in this room. Is it not? Can we all agree on that?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Whew. Okay. All right, so House File 3744, as amended, is what we are calling READ Act 2.0. Last year, thanks to this legislature, we invested $92 million in the READ Act and supported all students having access to evidence-based literacy and interventions in our public schools across the state of Minnesota. I want to thank all of you, genuinely thank all of you, for all of you in the audience, for all of your hard work. The READ Act was a tough bill to pass, but we came together and we are on our way. I want to specifically thank partners like teachers in Education Minnesota, superintendents, principals, AMSD, School Board Association, Rural Schools, Ed Allies, Decoding Dyslexia, MACD, Pelsby, and so many others. If I forgot you, it is not on purpose. Throughout the districts in Minnesota, work is being done. Thank you, Madam Chair, for saying that. This comes up often, and I will tell you, READ Act 2.0 is really the beginning of really trying to take all of the feedback possible. So I'm going to walk you through some of what we are doing in READ Act 2.0. I would love the committee members' feedback on this as well, because this is a lot of what you're going to see in here is what I'm hearing from communities all throughout the state. These are superintendents, these are teachers, and so many others. So, all right, so READ Act 2.0, it adds a third screener in the middle of the year. This is best practice, and a lot of districts are already actually doing this. It's making sure to catch, if we missed anybody at the first screener in the first 6 weeks of the year, catching them in the middle to make sure that they are getting intervention. So again, I guess you could think about it as like not waiting for kids to fail. It creates a report by Pelsey to the legislature in 2025 and 2026 about the progress of the reading audit that they're conducting right now. And they're diligently working on that with higher education, colleges, and universities. Currently, it's the bill allocates $23 million to districts to be used for teacher stipends or potentially substitute teachers. We want to make sure that teachers are paid for this great work that we are investing in, and we're trying to find creative ways to do that. That is one of the biggest items of feedback that I have heard on the READ Act. It clarifies that the local literacy plan, that a district would report the number of teachers and other staff required to complete the training as passed by the READ Act, so we can really get data points for the legislature or for all of my fellow colleagues when I am no longer here next year. Line 830, this is one for discussion. This is a lot of feedback I heard. So what it does is it looks at grades 1 through 3, excuse me, and it reduces, if the school board approves it, just for the 2024-2025 school year, for grades, again, 1 through 3, by 5.5 hours to use for teacher training of the READ Act. And that was from feedback from superintendents and teachers. Again, that would have to be something that would be passed by the school board. It also creates a special revenue fund for unused READ Act funds that would be starting in June 30th of 2028 to make sure that we will have those funds that will go to literacy. Extends the contract with CARI for 2 more years until August of 2027. It creates a partnership with CARI and MDE to train volunteers and paraprofessionals. It also, let's see here. It puts an end date for the curriculum review. Right now, districts will be making a curriculum review change, but this doesn't happen every single year, right, Representative Bakeberg? We know this. This is a big investment. So we don't need this this contract that we're doing with CARI to continue into perpetuity. We want to wrap up this curriculum review. So right now, there's an appeals process. Several appeals were resubmitted, the curriculum. So we have one more that would be... you know, I don't have the date in front of me, but I can circle back on that. Oh, I think it's August 1st of 2024 would be the last one. It allows local literacy incentive aid to be used for a literacy specialist. It creates literacy coaching pilot program. This language is in works. I've been working with Pelsby. They just sent me language, but I didn't meet the deadline, so I didn't send it in. It also adds a working group to ensure that we are being inclusive of students and teachers that are deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing. And I want to thank Alicia Lane for coming to meet with me. We are going to continue to work on language, and it creates a working group to make sure that the READ Act is inclusive of all students in the state of Minnesota. And so with that, Madam Chair, the work continues. It is good work, and I would like to pass it to my testifiers now.
All right. Thank you, Representative Edelson. All right, I have on my list, first of all, Dr. Kim Gibbons, the director of the Center for Applied Research and Educational Improvement. And then as we move through this, Dr. Justin Killian would be on deck next. Oh, and I believe Dr. Gibbons is on remote testimony. So if you can hear us, please unmute, introduce yourself again, and proceed.
Great. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Kim Gibbons, and I'm the director of the Center for Applied Research and Educational Improvement at the University of Minnesota. I'm also the co-director of the Wisconsin-Minnesota Comprehensive Center. We are currently part of the MDE CARI READ Act partnership team focusing on implementation, and we've also partnered with the department for the past 5 years on building and implementing the Minnesota MTSS framework. I just want to start by thanking you for your large investment in literacy. You matched the investment to the belief that it is possible for all of our students to achieve reading proficiency. I want to just take a few minutes and bring you up to date on some of the work that has been accomplished to date. We've worked with the department to help select the state-approved assessments, which included FastBridge and DIBELS. We identified 3 professional learning programs aligned with structured literacy on August 15th. And in January, a list of 5 curricula were identified using a rubric that was co-developed between the department and CARI, We did usability tests with districts in Minnesota and California. After each usability test, the rubric was revised, and that is the third edition of the rubric was used to evaluate curricula that were submitted for review in October. The rubric includes 8 domains, which we are looking, you are using the rubric to look for the domains of phonemic awareness, phonics and morphology, fluency, comprehension, vocabulary, writing, and cultural responsiveness. In addition, we have a global indicator that is looking at accessibility supports and scaffolds for multilingual learners. So the review encompassed looking at each curriculum, and each of those domains that I just listed had look-fors for each grade level. And the look-fors are evidence-based practices that we want to see. And we looked for each of those at each grade level, and that was scored a 1 or a 0 for each grade level. We also included red flags and red flag on the rubric. Red flags are non-evidence-based practices that we don't want to see. That is also scored 1 or 0 for each grade level. What culminated from that review is a list of 5 curricula. There's been a lot of questions since the list came out about why is the Minnesota list different from other states, and would like to just say that states are currently using a variety of ways that they determine which curriculum on the list. Some are relying on ed reports exclusively, and others superficially review curriculum to see if there are units or lessons on each of those domain areas that I listed, but they aren't looking for the red flags. And so what we found in Minnesota is when we were reviewing curriculum, many of the widely used curricula are really operating under 2 theoretical frameworks that oppose each other. So if it was a balanced literacy curriculum, they kept a lot of that same content and then sprinkled in structured literacy approaches. So we went much deeper and not only looked for the evidence-based practices, but again, the red flags. And I'd like to say that we had a review team of 32 individuals, including staff from CARI, the department, the regional centers of excellence, as well as outside consultants. And they spent 11,226 hours reviewing curriculum over a 6 to 8 week time period. So the bottom line is that nothing that was identified is 100% aligned with everything that we want to see, but we did find that there are curricula in existence that have a majority of those things that we want to see with minimal to no red flags. So the list that was released in January includes 1 comprehensive curriculum. A comprehensive curriculum is designed to provide instruction in all of the different sub areas of reading and writing. So that would be phonemic awareness, phonics, decoding, encoding, morphology, fluency, vocabulary, comprehension, and writing. The comprehensive curriculum that was identified was EL, Open Up Resources. The second type of curriculum that's on the list is a foundational skills curriculum. And that's a curriculum that is designed to provide instruction in at least 1 sub-area of foundational skills. So we identified 3 of those curriculum. That's UFLY, magnetic reading, and functional phonics and morphology. If a district would select a foundational skills curriculum, it would have to be paired with the 3rd type of curriculum, which is a language comprehension and knowledge building curriculum. So that is a curriculum that is designed to provide instruction in at least 1 sub-area of comprehension, vocabulary, comprehension, and writing. The program that was identified under language comprehension was Wit and Wisdom. If selected, that would need to be paired with a foundational skills program. So again, 5 programs identified, 1 comprehensive, 1 knowledge building, and 3 foundational skills program. We're now at the reconsideration process. All publishers received their scored rubrics. They had until February 29th to submit additional evidence on both the things that we want to see, the look-fors, and the red flags. We now have 60 days to review that additional information to determine any additions to the list. We did receive 13 resubmissions that were received from the first round. And to summarize, we've made it through helping to identify assessments, professional learning, curricula, and next up is to partner with MDE to develop a statewide coaching framework to provide coaching to the regional literacy networks, as well as identifying evidence-based interventions.
Thank you. Thank you. Next, we have Dr. Justin Killian from Education Minnesota. And please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Pryor, members of the committee, Representative Edelson. My name is Justin Killian, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the members of Education Minnesota. There's a lot in this bill. It's a very important bill, but today I want to touch on something that's very important to our members, and that is the professional development component of the READ Act 2.0. We all know that the majority of the people that are required to do this training under the READ Act are members of Education Minnesota, and they have been very loud and very vocal about the thing that concerns them. They know in their hearts and they believe that this is the best thing to do for the students of Minnesota, that this will actually help us close some of those persistent reading gaps in the state. But teaching shortages, lack of substitutes, crowded classrooms, and paired with the intense amount of emotional dysregulation they're seeing in their classrooms, they're stressed and they're really, really tired. And these trainings, the shortest one is about 45 to 50 hours of work, and letters is upwards of 150 hours of work. Districts are claiming that they are lacking funds, but our members are lacking time and capacity. And so we can no longer expect teachers to continue doing work for free outside of the contract day. And so we want to really thank Representative Edelson from the bottom of our hearts for hearing that and setting aside money in this bill so that our teachers can be compensated or so that districts can work this into the contract day by hiring substitutes or figuring out clever scheduling so that they don't have to do this when they want to be spending time with their own families at the end of a very long day. The other part of the professional development we'd really like to stress is that we like that there is going to be a collaboration with the University of Minnesota to train paraprofessionals. Too often paraprofessionals are forgotten, and our teacher members are quick to let us know that they can't survive in their classrooms without paraprofessionals, and so the attention to a specific training for paraprofessionals will be a tremendous help for everybody, especially those people working with our youngest readers. We want to thank Representative Edelson for the coalition of people she's brought together, the way that we have all worked cooperatively, and we'd like to thank our partners at MDE for being so responsive to the teacher questions that keep coming in. Our members are really, really excited to do this work. They just need the capacity and resources to get it done.
Thank you. We have Laura Mogelson from MACD, and I think Ms. Mogelson will remind us again what that stands for as you introduce yourself. And then next up that will be David Law from Minnetonka Public Schools. Okay, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Laura Mogelson, and I'm here today representing NACD, which is the Minnesota Association of Colleges of Teacher Education. I'm here to talk about House File 3744, the updates to the READ Act. Thank you so much, Representative Edelson, for your work on this bill, both last year and this year. It's quite a legacy. First, we greatly appreciate the provision allowing for reading methods instructors to take part in the training funded by the READ Act. Our faculty value this ongoing professional development to stay current on best practices. Second, we are supportive of an earlier draft of this bill before the DE4 that included the assurance that all teachers that are required to meet the standards for, let me reword this. We were in favor of an assurance in an earlier version of the bill that required people that are using the experience pathway, that is folks that are going from tier two to tier three, demonstrate evidence of meeting the standards for reading. And so those would be elementary education teachers, special education teachers, and early childhood teachers. These are people that are at a tier two and are participating in the approved professional development. Possibly they're enrolled in a program. Maybe they're utilizing the portfolio process. We're troubled that this provision has been removed, as these are the teachers that are in charge of teaching reading. And those standards, we feel like they really do matter, and we meet them in our programs. And to toss them out for a certain subset of teachers who are going to be earning a fully transferable Tier 3 license is very concerning to us. Lastly, we're concerned about a new addition in the bill. We actually just saw this last night with the DE4, and it's the Literacy Coaching Pilot Program, which is on line 13.24. This pilot program is in addition to a required report outlined on line 14.3 that is called the Pelsby Reading Audit Report that Representative mentioned in her summary. Paraphrased, this reads that Pelsby must partner with MDE to develop ways to evaluate teacher candidates. This additional requirement feels duplicative to us to the reading audit report, which is already carefully examining all of our programs. And we're just concerned about additional requirements that must be met prior to licensure that would just be one more barrier for our candidates. So thank you for your time today and your service, and thank you, Representative Edelson, and maybe thank you for the air conditioning that I just kicked on.
Yes.
Feels good. So thank you.
Thank you. All right, Dr. Locke.
Chair Pryor, members of the committee, thanks for having me here today. I want to start by acknowledging both Representative Pryor and Representative Edelson for listening, giving us quality time on the in virtual calls to talk about this act and implementation. We want to get it right. So I'm speaking to you as someone who for the last decade has been implementing aggressive strategies to improve student reading. When I was in Anoka, Hennepin, for 7 years in a row, the percentage of kids who read at grade level increased. We did that through guaranteed and viable curriculum, and we did it through robust teacher training. And it wasn't without pushback from across the community. Making lasting change is hard work, and we shouldn't be surprised that people are comfortable with where they are, and it's going to take a challenge to get them there. I'm talking about two specific things for you to consider today. One is timing, and one is funding. And the timing portion of this bill, I want to give perspective about an adoption process. I attended our staff development yesterday in Minnetonka as we used CORE, one of the providing trainers or suggested trainers, with our staff. We as a district set aside 4 full days of training for our teachers to get ahead of this training. Now, we were ahead of the listed providers, so the first two we didn't have a CORE identified. So we only have 2 days that would count this year. That means we'll need to do 3 additional full days of training with these teachers. I just want to point out that you can't have any other ideas besides reading, like non-exclusionary discipline or anything else, because all we're doing is reading training. For 3 full days next year, assuming all of our teachers attend every one of those days and we don't have any catch-up, we wouldn't be able to start new materials that are identified now until after that. If you've ever been in a classroom, learning how to think differently and learning what to use as materials, those are separate things and they take time. I anticipate probably 60 to 24 hours of good time with our teachers on new materials to intend to use them well. So please be thoughtful that if we're aggressive, if we were doing this on the pace we're at, we would be in the 25-26 school year before all of our staff were trained on the CORE training and on the new materials. And that's it's seamless. And we were proactive. So I feel for my colleagues that haven't started and are trying to build this in for next year. They would be through the 27 or 28 school year to get all that cycle in. flexibility and timing is important. That's not that when you hear that pushback, that doesn't mean we're not committed. That just means we want to do it right. And we don't want to overwhelm our teachers who are, I'm very respectful. Our teachers want to learn this while they're paid during the workday. If we can figure that out, that's best practice. Second, I just want to give your perspective on cost. When I was in Anoka, coming through the pandemic, we used federal funding. We set aside $10 million for post-pandemic recovery. With that funding, we provided additional support for our EL learners. We lowered our classroom size K-3. We really invested in reading intervention specialists, and we felt like that chunk of money had a chance to make a dent on the percentage of students that were reading. So much so that we went out to the voters in 2021 and said, this is really valuable. Please support $10 million a year for 10 years, and we are going to commit to supporting reading and literacy and post-pandemic recovery. And it failed. That would have been $100 million for Anoka Hennepin to support reading. If you take that out across the state, we're not getting $100 million for 300 districts to support reading for a year. Temper your expectations with your investment. It's great work. If you go to a car lot with $500 and great intentions, you're not going to drive out with a car for your family for a year. This type of work is valuable, but if you're committed, it takes a significant investment to give districts a chance to do it right. So we're committed. The flexibility is critical for us. I want you to give a realistic time frame on a district that's doing it full speed. Balancing the needs of our teachers, we are 3 years through the process from today to get it done right. So just to put that in perspective. And I really appreciate the courage of Representative Edelson, because it's never easy to make systemic change. So thank you for having us here.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Julia Quanrud from Serve Minnesota. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Julia Quanrud, and I am CEO of Serve Minnesota, our state's AmeriCorps commission. We operate 19 AmeriCorps programs in 78 of Minnesota's counties. I want to thank Representative Edelson for including Reading Corps, our largest AmeriCorps program, in last year's READ Act, and for the changes you are proposing in this bill. Reading Corps is the product of 20 years of partnership with this legislature, the department, Minnesota schools, and the roughly 10,000 Minnesotans who have served as Reading Corps tutors. Many of those tutors have gone on to become licensed teachers in school districts across the state. There are two changes to Section 19, the Reading Corps section. The first simply aligns the statute with the grades Reading Corps serves, pre-kindergarten through grade 3. The second change acknowledges that Reading Corps tutors receive more training than what is proposed in Section 17. In addition to substantial training, Reading Corps tutors are overseen by literacy coaches who ensure the program is implemented as designed and effective for every enrolled student. We continuously evaluate and improve our training and coaching. And as a result, Reading Corps has been proven effective in multiple research studies and has been recognized by Johns Hopkins Proven Tutoring, Stanford's National Student Support Accelerator, and the What Works Clearinghouse. We have also developed a foundational reading skills program that is provided to Minnesota schools and teachers for free. We appreciate the changes to Section 16 that clarify the review process for such programs, and we would request that these programs be referred to as foundational curriculum or programs rather than an intervention to reflect their true nature. Madam Chair, 13 other states have replicated the Reading Corps program because of its strong results in Minnesota. Our state is a national leader in developing and scaling an effective literacy program, and that leadership is due in large part to the support of the legislature over the past 20 years. We are very much looking forward to continuing supporting schools and implementing the READ Act, and we want to thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Next up, we have Amy Wallstein, Minnesota Business Partnership. Thank you for being with us. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members, and Representative Edelson. I'm Amy Wallstein. I'm the Senior Policy Director for the Minnesota Business Partnership. We're an organization of CEOs united by the mission to enhance Minnesota's competitiveness and ensure that we have a future-ready workforce. We're also united in our deep commitment to improving literacy outcomes in Minnesota. As others have said, this work on reading has been transformational, aligning classroom teaching to the science of how kids learn how to read is been very important. I want to thank Representative Edelson for the hard work you've put in on this. I took a group of MVP members to Monroe Elementary School in Anoka Hennepin last fall to see how this works in action, and they were amazed. Their media center specialist mentioned that the books are flying off the shelf, so we sent them money to fill their library. And we are just thrilled and amazed with the work that is being done in that school. They've been using evidence-based teaching, as Superintendent Law said. Anoka has put a lot of effort into reading, and it's paying dividends. This program is accelerating literacy for the youngest readers, and I think a lot of that is in part to what Ms. Quanrud said about the science for the foundational program, Bridge to Read. So we are very supportive of making sure that that is made strong in this program. We also support several key pieces of the READ Act 2.0 innovations like literacy clinics. I think that's going to be something that will be quite positive, as well as the support for teachers and their professional development. I think that's critical to this process as well. So these pieces that are coming forward in READ Act 2.0 will keep the work going, keep the momentum going for reading, and we are looking forward to seeing great results down the road. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, and that's who we have now for our testimony and our bill presentation. We will move to member discussion. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Pryor, and thank you, Representative Ellison, for READ Act 2.0. Sounds familiar. All right, so I would like to say that I did, to echo some of the things that Chair Pryor said. You know, as I was talking to many of my teachers and school boards, they were very overwhelmed by the kind of the bureaucracy of this and the underfunding of this. And so it's good to see an acknowledgement of how we need to kind of play catch up here and get some funding for this as we are looking at what they and what we're asking them to do. I totally echo what Superintendent Law talked about. You know, to do this well does take time and take money, and appreciate being able to have a second chance, a second stab at giving this some funding that it deserves. I did have a question, though, on line 3.9, and it's a question that I asked the other people who were here for the governor's bill, because he included this language in his bill as well. And it says, the following teachers and instructional staff must complete the training required under the READ Act by July 27, and it says, teachers who provide reading instruction to students in grade 4 through 12. And I guess my question is, you know, content teachers, while they focus on content in 4 through 12, they also have to teach how to read that content. And so technically we all are reading teachers, whether we've been trained in it or not. So my question is this for, is it that? Or is it for the people who are needing remedial help and they're going to reading specialists that just happen to work in secondary education?
Representative Ellison.
Madam Chair, Representative. Teachers who provide reading instruction. Now, I have eighth graders mm-hmm. that actually get reading intervention. And so it's provided by a special education teacher. They have an IEP.
Right.
So as we start to, I mean, there will be specific people that are good. I mean, any school, I mean, you've worked in a school. You're a teacher, right?
Yep.
So while you may have a content area, and maybe you will help with a line or two, you're not going to be providing weekly intervention or multiple week. I mean, we know who those teachers are in a school.
Sure.
So I guess, I mean, if you want, like, specific language changes, please do let me know. I'm happy to work with you. But this is really to target the people in the schools that are the special education teachers or reading interventionalists that are really doing that work.
Right.
Jafar.
And is there a further question or follow-up on that
yeah,
one?
Yeah, just real quick. Thank you, Chair Pryor, and thank you. That's what I wanted to know. And I think that I believe that was your intention. The reason why I asked that is because, you know, one of the reasons that I'm seeing, you know, one of the fallacies that we have about reading is that just because you learn how to read, you know, by standard, by third grade, doesn't mean you're automatically going to read all the complex texts that we get in high school. And so one of the things that I've advocated for is disciplinary literacy, which is every content teacher is a reading teacher. And so that's why when I saw it, I'm like, ooh, are we going to be going that way? Or are we going to be talking about the reading interventionist? And so I just wanted to just have clarity. I don't think we need comfort language in there. I just wanted to know what that intention was. So I appreciate, again, I been looking at the investments that you have in the back here with the appropriations of $100 million. I know that in the, you know, the proposal that we had given before had $250 million that we're trying to give directly to our classrooms and to our teachers and to our students. And so trying to make sure that we have as a direct route as possible for these, because as you heard from the superintendent, it takes time and it takes money. And so any time that we can have this money given to our schools rather than through some convoluted bureaucracy would be really helpful. So thank you for what you have. And I'm excited to see us being proactive in this. Thank you, Representative Edelson.
No, I think if we didn't have discussion, I was fine with that. So Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Edelson. Representative Edelson and I had a conversation in the stairwell as we were walking up. We'll talk more. But one of the questions that has come up a lot to me and I may have missed it in the bill, but so we have the, and I'm thinking about the professional development of teachers, and I would echo what Dr. Killian said and what Dr. Law said. Yes. This is a really heavy lift for our educators, for our teachers. And you think about their parents, their moms, their dads, their, you know, spouses, whatever, they have lives outside of school. So we have to be very cautious and be very intentional on how we do that. Because overwhelmingly what I've heard from educators is, amen, let's do this. I want to do this. And frankly, what I hear most often is, man, I really want to go all in and be trained fully in the science of reading with Lexia. But man, my life, just all of the stuff that I have going outside is really hard. So how can we structure that? So looking at all of those three different options of professional development, and maybe Dr. Law could offer some insight, but is there a plan to measure the success, the student success, of the educators that go through the three different options?
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Representative Baker. And I remember that conversation in the state when I just pulled up the bill number right now, 3744, Edelson. I still don't see you on the bill. Waiting for you to cheat, help me author this. You as well, Representative Mueller. I think this should be bipartisan this year. I'm hoping for that. In terms of assessing where students are with each one, yes, we did think about that. We thought about that last year. And so what we have with the local literacy plan is what we will see is there's the Fast Bridge or DIBLE report, right? So we're doing the screener beginning of the year, end of the year right now. But then, so when the districts are going to report this aggregated data, kind of like we do with MCAs, they will also be reporting which of the professional development they use in that local literacy plan. So we will be able to aggregate that and see where we're getting best results. And actually the entire state of Minnesota and all the districts will be able to see that readily available. We also gave money for technology so MDE can aggregate this in a really helpful way. But not only the professional development, we also aggregated it in terms of curriculum. So it's looking at the curriculum, looking at the professional development, looking at those results and seeing which districts need more help. And so, and which ones are excelling and which, so we get to reassess this. So I think that's a really great question. Thank you for asking.
All right, and we do have a hard stop on the committee today because we have other discussions in the evening, and so we hope that we can move through and save our floor speeches.
This is really important, and I'm not giving a floor speech. Mm-hmm. Like this is important work. Mm-hmm. So, frankly, that's Yeah, I'll leave that. So I think the piece that Dr. Law said very well, and I would love to connect with you, and I'd love Dr. Law, because you have data from Anoka Hennepin. And, you know, talking about timing, talking about funding, and talking about the flexibility, there's hours built into the calendar, but I'd love to get feedback from people that are further down the line, and is that enough time? And what else do districts need? So with that, I don't want to take more time. So
we'll have the READ Act 3.0, yeah. And we'll, because it's a continually work in progress. We have, Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief, and I just want to say thank you, Representative Edelson. You know, there were things last year we were working on. We didn't always agree on the little small parts, but you have had a monumental task here, and you've done, I'd say by and large, a good job. So thank you for that. It's a passion of mine, teaching of reading. It's a paradigm shift. It's hard to make those shifts. And so there's always going to be tweaks needed. I appreciate the funding you've got in here. I hope we can hang on to it. It's important, and I'm not signing on to funding bills this year, but this is one I do support. And the one thing I think that's really important in this bill is the audit of the teacher prep programs. We need to make sure that our training of teachers lines up with this as well, so we don't have to keep training them again when they get back to our schools. So I just want to say thank you. I think you've worked incredibly hard. You've taken on a huge task, and you did a good job.
We appreciate the comments on the teacher's prep and how we'll look at that section carefully and make sure that it's fleshed out in the way that we can do it this year, and to keep advancing the discussion. And I know Representative Edelson may not be the one, and Representative Edelson will not be the one that brings this bill back next year for further work, but we hope that there will be someone else that becomes as enmeshed in this as she has been, and will continue it. Representative Bennett.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And just to say, I know there is no perfection in bills. I have learned this, and this. There's always things we're going to need to fix on the best bill, and so we'll just keep on. That's how we make things work well for our schools, and we'll keep listening and carry on. But just want to say that good work.
And I will make the comment, too, that we are sending this now onto Education Finance, as we all know, and that especially the DE amendment that was introduced now, hearing the comments that there's not been a lot of time to react to what exists in the bill now, Education Finance, I'm sure, would entertain another amendment if there's work and clarification that can be done as we go forward before the next committee meeting. And so I think that's what we see today, is this idea of this being the process that we all need to be engaged on as we work with our districts and get this feedback. And we do appreciate the history that one of my superintendents, Dr. Law, has brought forward, and Anoka Hennepin, and now what they see in Minnetonka that's informing this. And I know that Representative Edelson has brought that forward. So appreciate what we're able to discuss and bring forward in this committee and as we continue on this process. With that, I would like to move this bill on to Education Finance, knowing that probably the best work is done outside of this committee, between now and the next committee. So, with that, Representative Frederick renews his motion to move House File as amended, House File 3744 as amended.
Frazier, right?
Okay, I'm just making sure. Sorry. Those details are important, so thank you for that clarification. Otherwise, we may not have moved the bill that we intended to. Representative Frazier renews his motion to move House File 3744 as amended to Education Finance. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. With that, 3744 as amended is moving on. All right, and I will have Representative Hill come forward for 3995. All right. So this is House File 3995, and members, it's our intention to hear this bill and then lay it over for further consideration. And Vice Chair Hill, would you motion to bring House File 3995 before the committee to be laid over for further consideration?
That would be the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hill. All right. And I believe that you do have an A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that you would like. Would you please motion that before us, too?
Yep. I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
And any description of the A1 amendment that you think would be useful?
It slightly adjusts the members of the working group that are identified, and we'll speak to that further here as we move through our...
Right. And again, this was an amendment that did come in, maybe not, what we would call a deadline, but it's a small adjustment, and we will accept it for the bill today. And so any other discussion of House of the Amendment A1? To get to the bill in the shape that the author would like it. All right. Hearing none, no further discussion. All in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. A1 amendment is adopted. All right. We have the bill before us now. Vice Chair Hill, would you please introduce House File 3595 as amended?
Thank you, Chair Pryor and members. House File 3995 directs the Pelsby Board, the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, to establish a working group on special education licensure reciprocity. As many folks know, certainly a lot of the folks in this room who have been in proximity to our committee work, we do have a shortage here in Minnesota. And so the purpose of this working group is to bring stakeholders in Pelsby together to review current statute and rules governing special education licensure, and make recommendations on changes necessary to streamline requirements for out-of-state applicants who want to serve our students here in the state of Minnesota. Unlike other states, Minnesota has a variety of special education licensure areas, which makes the reciprocity process difficult to navigate for out-of-state licensed special education teachers who are, once again, wishing to serve students and families here in Minnesota. School districts across Minnesota are facing this shortage, and streamlining this process can help increase the pool of qualified licensed special education teachers. We do have a testifier that's joined us here. Tanya Tacker is going to initiate.
All right. And this is remote testimony. I do have Tanya Tacker on as part of the presentation, Rum River Special Education Cooperative. And if you can hear us, please unmute, introduce yourself, and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Education Policy Committee, and Representative Hill. My name is Tanya Tacker, and I'm the Executive Director of Special Education for the Rum River Special Education Cooperative. I am testifying in support of House File 3995. The out-of-state reciprocity process for special education licensure is complex due to the variety of special education licenses for teachers of special education in Minnesota, making it more difficult for teachers licensed in other states to use reciprocity to obtain a Minnesota license. The licensure requirements for special education are also complex. For example, the blind visually impaired license is required in the state, but there are no colleges or universities in Minnesota that offer this licensure program. Another example is Minnesota is one of the few states that require the physical impairment license, while other states do not. While there may be qualified licensed special education teachers from other states with a license that is similar, but because that license is not exactly the same or directly comparable, these special education teachers often cannot obtain reciprocity in Minnesota. For example, a teacher from out of state who is licensed to work with special education students ages birth to age 9 wanted to work in early elementary special education in Minnesota. This teacher's license was denied as their license in Minnesota could only allow them to work with students ages birth to age 6, limiting her to only early childhood programs. Establishing this work group would allow for a process that engages impacted stakeholders to review statutes and rules that make it more difficult for individuals with special education licenses from another state to qualify for a special education license in Minnesota, which in turn would assist districts with filling vacant positions with licensed special education teachers to be in front of students with disabilities. Thank you for all you do on behalf of Minnesota students, and thank you for the opportunity to share my experience in support of House File 3995.
All right. I have no more testifiers that have signed up to speak to this bill, and so we will turn to member discussion. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Pryor, and thank you, Vice Chair Hill. So I guess I'm a little confused at even the necessity of this group, not because I mean, I've been subbing in my schools, I've been working in schools for a long time, just like how you have, and we obviously see the shortage of special education, but in 2017, we created a tiered system so that there were multiple points of entry. Now, I know that there was an OSEP report that talked about how tier one SPED teachers needed to, could only be limited to 2-3 years and all those things, but this was designed to make it easier for reciprocity. I guess I'm what in our tiered licensing system is not allowing our special education teachers to use it.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Pryor. Representative, thank you for the question. I think that because the problem has become so extreme with our shortage, we're trying to put all hands on deck and trying to come at this problem from as many angles as it takes to solve it. And so as we move through this, putting all of the players together to put their best effort towards this was the way that, that this bill was designed. And it does have a quick turnaround. They will report in 11 months from now, and we can move forward with those recommendations as the committee sees fit.
Follow-up, Chair Parr.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that. I do realize that it is very dire, and when we heard about how federal funding was being moved from different places because of the OSEP decision, and we were seeing people who were moving through the tiered system, who were working towards getting that, and so I guess you know what I don't want to see happen is that, you know, this working group is trying to find a solution when we already possibly have one, and that we're going to put more restrictions that we see that have already been established in our tiered licensing system already. You know, I had to do a reciprocity, not as a special education teacher, but it is true to before 2017 for me to get, I mean, I graduated from a Minnesota school, I had a Minnesota license, I worked in Indiana, I had my Indiana license, my Minnesota license left, I came back and trying to get that, and I was told, basically, we don't do reciprocity with anyone. And it's just, and that was before 2017. So to know that we were intentional about trying to fix this problem, and now we have to go back and fix it again when we already have a fix, just seems a little redundant. I see another testifier maybe coming down to make a comment about this. And so if it's okay with you, Chair Pryor, I would like to hear what they have to say, please.
Representative Hill, are you?
Thank you, Chair Pryor. Yes, that'd be
well, Ms. Dozlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dozlin. I represent the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education. I'm not an expert on tiered licensure, and I'm not an expert on special ed licensure, but my understanding is it's not the tiered system that's the issue. It's the variety of different special ed licenses that we have here in Minnesota don't always line up easily for comparison for reciprocity purposes. And I do see that Pelsby is in the room, and maybe they can answer some of those questions. And I would add, you know, Pelsby has been very good working with our school districts and trying to determine if a out-of-state licensed teacher with their special ed license can do reciprocity, and they try to work through it. But sometimes they aren't able to just because of the broad, we have many special ed licenses here in Minnesota.
Thank you, Chair Pryor. I would,
I know that we had,
we're trying to see, thank you.
And would, you know, well, at this point, do we further clarification or we can also follow up?
Yeah, I was going to say, thank you, Chair Pryor. I would like to follow up offline then just mm-hmm. to ask, just to, I mean, if we have the system already available, then let's figure out why it's not working, because that's what it was designed to do. But thank you, Vice Chair Hill, for, you know, making a concerted effort to address the problem.
All right. So we'll make a special note of a follow-up with Representative Mueller on these specific questions about what's wrong with their current system that we need a working group to further reciprocity and accepting more licensed teachers from other states. All right, other, and Representative, nope. And, all right, so seeing no further discussion. All right, closing remarks, Representative Hill.
No, and I appreciate the questions. I think that what we've seen is Pelsby has been amended each year. It's been in existence, and this is another effort to solve the concern in front of us today and to bring more licensed educators into our special education classrooms moving forward. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hill. And hearing no more discussion and no more testifiers, Representative Hill will renew his motion to lay over House File 3595 for further with as amended for further consideration. All right, done. All right, you can stay in place. We have House File 4361, and our intention is to re-refer this bill to Education Finance Committee. So, Representative Hill. We'll let our we'll get situated with our presentation for today on House File 4361. All right, Representative Hill, would you like to motion HF 4361 before the committee to be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee?
Thank you, Chair. That would be the motion.
All right, thank you. And I don't see any amendments on this one. And so I think we'll let you introduce your bill, introduce your testifiers, and please proceed.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Chair Pryor, members. I have another bill regarding Pelsby, and so some of the same questions may come in. We are joined here at the table by our Pelsby experts, Dr. Bailey and Ms. Vaught, who will be able to kind of walk through the different pieces and elements of this bill, and they will also be on hand here to answer any questions that may arise.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for being with us, Executive Director. Could you please introduce yourself for the committee and for the record and proceed with your presentation?
Great. Hopefully you can hear me with that one all right. Perfect. Chair Pryor, members of the committee, thank you for having us here today. My name is Dr. Elena Bailey. I'm the Executive Director of the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, otherwise known as PELSBY. And I have with me here today my Chief of Staff, Michelle Hirschfeld, to help with the bill walkthrough. Before we do jump into things today, I do want to take a moment to thank you all for the work you did last year. We have had countless educators call and email showing their appreciation for the laws that were passed last year. Some of those are members of the 900 or so educators who could now get a Tier 3 or Tier 4 license because you removed that testing requirement for individuals who completed prep or licensure via portfolio. We've also had lots of heritage language educators reach out, who are very excited about the expedited pathway to licensure. And I just want to briefly share one quick story. We had a Somali educator call in tears because in 2009 she completed an elementary education program, but because of a family tragedy she couldn't get through the testing requirement. So she stayed home with her family, came back as an EA, and then when she heard about the heritage language pathway, she came to us to see if she could re-enter the classroom again. And she was ecstatic when we told her that she could immediately get a Tier 3 license because of the removal of that testing requirement. So that is one highly qualified educator of color that you've brought into the classroom. That's one of them. I just think that you often get a lot of questions and pressure, and we wanted to at least say thank you and show you the one of the ways that you are changing lives in very meaningful ways. So with that, I will turn it over to Michelle Hirschfeld to get us started.
Good afternoon. Again, my name is Michelle Hirschfeld, and I'm Pelsby's Chief of Staff. Today we'll be walking through House File 4361, and I'm excited to share there are only 18 sections, and compared to previous years of Pelsby-related items, that is actually quite small. And many of these are quite technical in nature, so when there is a policy change, we will be sure to highlight so that you're aware of when there's a big change versus maybe a wording change. So Section 1, clarifies requirements and submission timelines regarding a report that was first created last year during the 2023 legislative session and includes data from Pelsby, OHE, and MDE grant programs that seek to increase the diversity of the state's teacher workforce. The proposed timelines would shift to align with Pelsby's supply and demand report, so pushing that to from 2024 to 2025. Section 2 does something similar. It clarifies the submission timelines for the supply and demand report, pushing it from a February to a November timeline, again hoping that that data can be aligned with some of our other reports and used collectively to help inform policymakers make better decisions. The statute, that section also clarifies what is actually being collected and what can be collected. Again, so more technical changes to align with what is happening and what is recommended with timelines, again, to make that meaningful data. Section 3 does two things, so I'm going to break those out. The first item establishes a timeline for the Board of School Administrators to take over the issuance of administrative licenses. And the second authorizes Pelsby to collect data on non-licensed staff on behalf of the Minnesota Department of Education as part of our reporting system. So that second piece is, again, what we consider more technical in nature. It's, again, codifying the ability to share that, collect and share that data. But jumping back to that first item around BOSA, the 2017 legislature transferred all licensing duties specific to administrators that was previously undertaken by the Minnesota Department of Education's licensing division to BOSA effective January 1, 2018. That transfer of powers is in law. That did not happen, so this section would set a timeline for that transition to take place effective June 30th, 2025. So again, that transfer of powers was adopted in 2017, and again, this is just setting a timeline forward.
All right, sections 4 through 6 simply codify the federal requirements for special education teachers who hold the Tier 1 and Tier 2 license. It's important to note that this does not change eligibility for those licenses, nor does it add additional burdens to districts. It's simply codifying existing federal requirements.
Section 7, again, very technical in nature. It's a terminology change, and it clarifies that a teacher is recommended for licensure via portfolio. They are not necessarily granted a license. That is done through the application process where they get a background check, etc.
Section 8 expands pathways to a Tier 4 license to include teachers who do the licensure via portfolio pathway. That is a standards-based pathway that we'd love to elevate to the Tier 4 license. And it also would include teachers who complete a national board certification, which is a very rigorous process. Similarly, Section 9 expands the exemption from the pedagogy and content exams to include individuals who complete that national board certification.
Section 10 removes a reference to skills examinations, as the skills exam requirement was eliminated last session for teachers seeking that Tier 4 license. And then Section 11 codifies the common practice of removing a teacher from a teaching assignment after being charged with a crime identified in our auto revocation statute, which is 122A20, subdivision 1B.
Sections 12 and 13 clarify that district teacher development and evaluation processes must be aligned to the standards of effective practice. We've spoken with our colleagues at MDE. That was the original intention, but the language isn't explicit. So this is really a technical change, so districts know very clearly what's being asked of them. It does not impact how teacher development and evaluation takes place, and it does not impact local control.
Okay, we're in the home stretch. Last couple of sections. Sections 14 and 15 modify a new statute that was created last year, 122A.631, which creates the Heritage Language and Culture Licensure Pathway, and it modifies the definition to clarify who falls under the definition of a Heritage Language and Culture teacher. Section 15 authorizes Pelsby the ability to prioritize program participation based on languages used by Minnesota students as well as licensure scarcity. If you are able to access our slides later, we have quite a bit of data about implementation from the 2023 session. So you'll be able to see that we had more than 90 applicants and only 50 slots of funding. So that is to help us prioritize who is able to go through that program. Section 16 expands eligibility for Pelsby's teacher mentorship grant to include the four tribal contract schools in Minnesota. Section 17 expands eligibility to the Preparation Pathways Grant to include Tier 1 teachers. Currently, it is limited to Tier 2 teachers. And finally, Section 18 is our repealer. The first is to repeal 122A.2451 Subdivision 9, which establishes a reporting requirement, which is already in place in Section 122A.091. And the second is to repeal 122A.185 Subdivision 4, which refers, again, to the basic skills examination, which is no longer a requirement to a Tier 4 license.
And with that, Madam Chair, we would open it up for our testifiers at this time.
All right. Thank you. And we do have two public testifiers that would like to join us. So first up will be Laura Mollison, and then Matt Schaefer. And if you would reintroduce yourself for on this bill and proceed.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Laura Mogelson, and I'm here from the Minnesota Association of Colleges of Teacher Education, or MACT. I'm here today regarding the tiered licensure system for special education teachers that is in House File 4361. We're encouraged by the improvements in the bill to address issues raised by the October 2022 and May 2023 memos from the Office of Special Ed Programs, or OSEP, to the Minnesota Department of Ed. Federal law requires that special education teachers enrolled in alternate routes must demonstrate satisfactory progress towards obtaining full licensure. In Minnesota, we have both higher education and alternative providers that offer these alternate routes for Tier 2 teachers to earn or to be recommended for a Tier 3 license. The memo points to federal law that explicitly prohibits the waiver of special education licensure requirements on an emergency, a temporary, or a provisional basis. That's a very important point. I want to recognize the substantial challenges the districts face in recruiting and retaining special education teachers. MACD acknowledges the efforts made to support new special education teachers that came out of last session, such as Representative Bennett's bill. In House File 4361, Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers must demonstrate satisfactory progress towards full licensure. We suggest a small clarification that defines satisfactory progress being met through demonstrating evidence of meeting the standards of effective practice and the subject matter standards for special education. So there are two sets of standards, and demonstrating meeting those standards would be appropriate evidence of demonstrating progress towards full licensure to come into line with the requirements of federal law. So we, in conclusion, appreciate the positive strides made in 4361 to address OSEP's concerns. To be clear, having teachers meet standards is not meant to be an arbitrary barrier. We believe this is important in terms of preparing and supporting our teachers to ensure that they meet the needs of all of their students. So thank you, Representative Hill, for all of your work on this bill, and members of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Schaefer, if you could please approach. And introduce yourself and begin with your testimony.
Chair Pryor, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Shaver, and I am the policy director at Allies. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on the Pelsby bill. I also want to thank Representative Hill for continuing to demonstrate a willingness to hear multiple perspectives on a complex topic. Last week, I spent the bulk of my testimony talking about which aspects of the special education proposals were necessary in order to align our licensure system with IDEA. And I just want to reiterate that my organization supports the change required by OSEP and agreed to by the Department of Education to limit Tier 1 special education licenses to 3 years. Today, I'm going to share our questions, concerns, and suggestions on how to clarify and improve upon what is actually being proposed here. The first issue is that the Tier 1 and Tier 2 proposals create a subdivision 1A titled Special Education Requirements within a subdivision titled Application Requirements, which are pulled directly from federal IDEA legislation. This is problematic because that puzzle piece doesn't neatly fit into our licensure laws. Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers are already required in statute to do mentorship and professional development, which makes these proposals potentially redundant, and more importantly, makes it unclear how someone may be able to get an initial license. So we have some questions about the language itself. How are we defining and measuring PD that is sustained and intensive? Is that specific to special education topics or broader than that? How are we defining and measuring PD that has, quote, a positive and lasting impact on classroom instruction? Like other teachers in the room, I can think of some PD experiences that definitely didn't have a positive and lasting impact on my instruction. But as a Tier 4 teacher, my license isn't dependent on receiving the kind of PD that does. What is meant when the policy proposal says that PD must happen before and while teaching? What does a program of intensive supervision look like? Is that something districts are already doing? Which ones are doing it well? Which ones aren't? How do we know? Is this a new requirement? Is this program meant to be a teacher prep program? This proposal says Tier 1 teachers can do that intensive supervision program or a teacher mentoring program. But again, all Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers are already required to do mentorship. So does this proposal make it optional? Finally, what does it mean for someone to, quote, demonstrate satisfactory progress toward professional licensure? According to whom and based on what? There needs to be some clarity there. Ambiguity in statute will foster subjectivity in licensure decisions, which will impact teachers' ability to continue teaching and will have a negative impact on kids. If the goal is to place clear expectations about the kind of PD and mentorship special education teachers already receive, we encourage language that clearly defines that in statute and open up rulemaking. We've sent proposals to MDE and Pelsby outlining our concerns and suggestions so a well-intentioned policy doesn't create barriers to the folks raising their hands to teach students with disabilities in our schools right now, even and especially those taking an alternative route to the classroom who are saints, frankly, and deserve licensure policy that makes it clear how they can start and can continue their careers. Thank you all for your time today, for your public service to our state.
Thank you. Having no more testifiers, we will turn to member discussion. Okay. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question for Pelsby, I believe it would be. So there are changes, obviously, to Tier 1 and Tier 2 in this bill with the licensure. And considering that the federal issue was the three-year issue, that they shouldn't be allowed to teach more than 3 years for a Tier 1 licensure, why all these extra changes for Tier 1 and Tier 2?
Dr. Bailey?
Chair Pryor and Representative Bennett, it's a great question. So while OSEP did identify one thing that we have to do, they also clarified the federal requirements in general. And I think it's important, I think everyone at this committee would agree, that we are in compliance with federal regulations. So this is simply an attempt to codify those. Most districts, as you shared, should be meeting those, so it shouldn't be an additional burden. But this is in the spirit of us meeting that compliance, the spirit of those requirements. So it's not additional burdens. This is what is already a federal requirement. It's just codifying that in our state law so it's clear for districts, there's no confusion, and so that educators are ensuring they get that support that they need.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Just a comment then. Thank you for explaining that. Sometimes I think we let the federal government push us around a little too much, but I know, you know, we have to listen to them as well. I feel like we're coming to a point where we're actually regulating our teachers out of existence, and we have to be careful that we have a balance here in Minnesota of strong licensures and strong expectations for teachers, but sometimes we take away things that are very important, and I don't think you're part of this, I can't remember, but even taking out the teacher test for making sure teachers are accountable for understanding basic teaching of reading. And yet, then we continue to add all these different regulations to Tier 1 and Tier 2, kind of turning them into Tier 3 and 4, and it's defeating the purpose, which is why Rep. Hill needed to bring the bill prior to this before us, that we have a study group to look at reciprocity issues. So we need to tone back a bit and understand the practicalities that they're dealing with in schools. It's getting to be too much for our schools. And so I would suggest we ratchet back on a lot of these and stop trying to do all these things that we can do and let our schools just take a breath and work and let our teachers take a breath and work, because it's getting to be a lot. So that's just my suggestion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Pryor. I just wanted to quickly say thank you to the work that Pelsby and Chair Hill have done on this, Vice Chair Hill have done on this bill. I know it seems like we're doing more than what's required, but the problem is 50% of our teachers that are in our classrooms with our most vulnerable students are Tier 1 or Tier 2, and the federal government has said that those qualifications aren't enough. So fixing this was really important. I also want to acknowledge that what teachers with special education students also do is they also do IEPs, which are legal binding documents. And I'm sure that districts would much rather make sure that those legal binding documents are done by qualified professionals, as a lot more money will be spent in lawsuits if they're not followed. So that is just something I wanted to point out, but I'll toss it back to Chair Hill.
All right, so we have a couple more bills that we're going to get to, so if we have a brief closing comment, we'll take a vote on moving this bill on to Education Finance. Representative Phil.
Wonderful. Thank you, Chair Pryor. Thank you, members. As we move forward, I'm sure that I will be, or somebody else will be, before you in the future as we continue to try to get things to a perfect place. And I think I heard Representative Bennett say there's no perfect in legislation, that we got to continue to work on it. So I appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Thank you. And with that, Vice Chair Hill renews his motion to re-refer House File 4361 to the Education Finance Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Motion carries, and House File 4361 is on its way to its Education Finance. And now we have the body's newest member, Representative Bernick, is joining us. And we have two bills that we would like to hear from Representative Bernick. So first of all, it's House File 3973, Representative Bernick not being a member of the committee. Representative Feist, would you like to motion House File 3973 before the committee to be laid over for further consideration?
That is my motion.
Thank you. All right. And I also believe that we have an A1 amendment. And Representative Feist, would you also please move the A1 amendment? And then we'll start with the presentation in the A1 amendment.
Yes, I move the A1 amendment.
All right. And this is to get, it's an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape that she would prefer. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, the A1 amendment has been added to the bill. All right, Representative Bernick, please introduce your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Pryor and committee members. In front of you today is House File 3973, a bill that clarifies the role of the licensed nurse or licensed school nurse in the administration of drugs and medicine in order to save a student's life. And I have with me today Denise Herman from the Department of Health to testify as a subject matter expert.
All right. Denise Herman, please introduce yourself again for the record and begin with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Denise Herman. I'm in the Minnesota Department of Health in the Adolescent and School Health Unit. Specifically, this is just language clarification. The title school nurse belongs to nurses licensed under Minnesota rule Part 8710-6100. So using school nurse in both the first section, which was number one, and number two was redundant. So the intent is that licensed nurses within their scope of practice, whether that would be an RN or an LPN, who are not a licensed school nurse under that Minnesota rule, can help develop safe medication procedures with a school or a school district.
All right. Well, that sounded important. I'm glad that we have that corrected now. All right. And then would you, do you have further presentation of your bill?
Simple today. We're real easy.
That was it.
We got like 5 minutes. So.
Okay. All right. Discussion. All right. With that, no closing remarks, too, right? We're good?
Yeah, we can move right into the next one.
All right. With that, Representative Feist renews her motion to lay over 3973 as amended for further consideration. All right. All right. And now we do move on to 3959, and I will not attempt to describe the bill. I would stumble over some of these words. And again, Representative Feist, would you also move House File 3973 before us for to be laid over for further consideration?
Yep, so moved, Madam Chair.
Right, and I believe that we again have an A2 amendment to get the shape in the form that the author would like it. And would you please move the A2 amendment?
Yep, so moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Feist. All right, discussion on the A2 amendment, and I believe that the author can again describe the A2 amendment as we discuss the bill. Discussion? All in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right. The amended is adopted. All right. Representative Vernick, if you can present your bill as amended with the A2.
Sure. Thank you again, Chair Pryor and committee members. House File 3959 is another bill addressing the administration of life-saving prescription medication. This bill allows the licensed practical nurse to administer EpiPens in a school according to condition-specific protocol. Currently, the LPN, or the licensed practical nurse, can administer the EpiPen after calling the licensed nurse for approval. With workforce shortages, more and more schools are relying on LPNs to staff the health office. Eliminating the need to call the nurse expedites the administration of these potentially life-saving medications. Again, I have Denise Herman here to testify as a subject matter expert from MDH.
All right. Please reintroduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Denise Herman. Again, I'm with the Minnesota Department of Health in the Adolescent and School Health Unit. This added language ensures that all licensed nurses, meaning both RNs and LPNs, can administer this prescription medication and operate at the same time under the Minnesota Nurse Practice Act, which is their legal scope of practice for nursing.
All right, thank you. Member questions or discussion? President Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question. It says by school personnel, and then I understand the including a licensed nurse after that. But school personnel, are we talking literally anyone?
And whichever of you'd like to, if you're able to address that question.
This,
Ms. Herman.
Thank you. Sorry, Committee Chair.
No. It was my fault for not calling you.
No, that's fine. The amendment per se is addressing nursing practice so that the nurses can administer this under their scope of practice. Clarifying that nurses are a part of school personnel because that isn't totally defined anywhere else in the statute of who is school personnel.
Okay. A follow-up, Representative Berg?
Yes, thank you, Chair. That's great. Very glad we're clarifying that for sure. But the line ahead of it, or in the bill, it says school personnel. So, and I understand that if a student is experiencing this, it's, you know, critical that the EpiPen is administered right away. I'm just curious that it says including a licensed nurse, I guess, and it's semantics rather than saying preferably a licensed school nurse or somebody that actually has that training. So I guess I'm just like secretaries or deans or principals or teachers even. So we're talking anyone but preferably a school nurse.
I would agree. Unfortunately, not all schools and school districts have nursing at this time. But they do train through nursing delegation. Even some nurses have one nurse to several buildings, and they will train teachers, school secretaries, paraprofessionals to administer in their absence. Mm-hmm. School districts also have access to many online programs for if they do not have a nurse to help with the training of those folks as well.
Okay. Assemberg? All right. Thank you for the clarification. Any other discussion or comments on this particular bill that we're hearing now? And closing comments, Representative Vernick.
Yes, thank you for your consideration of House File 3959. This will allow nurses, school nurses, and school LPNs working in the school districts to administer the EpiPen swiftly in the time of need. So thank you for your consideration.
All right. Thank you. And with that, Representative Feist renews the motion to lay over House File 3959 as amended for further consideration. All right. Thank you. All right. So our that concludes our business of today, and our meeting is adjourned.